Welcome to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about our relationships with and impacts upon the environment. I'm Chris Cherniak.
And I'm Claire Wiley.
And joining us in the first part of the show is E.E. Hsu and Andy Hecht. They're both from the Park City Community Foundation, and they're here to talk about and actually give us a little update on a curbside food waste collection program they're trying to launch as part of the Community Foundation's Zero Food Waste Initiative. First of all, E.E. and Andy, thank you so much for joining us this morning on the show.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
You were here back in January to kind of give us a sketch of what you were planning to do with the formal launch of the program. Well, it looks like it's happening now. And so back in January, give us a little sketch on what you were here to talk about back then and maybe how things have changed or not. Who wants to?
Sure. Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you for having us back here after we were here in January. Back in January, we had just finished our strategic planning for the Zero Food Waste Initiative. And that was a goal that was set last year by Park City Community Foundation's Climate Fund. Super excited about this goal. And in January, we were just beginning, kind of in the middle of planning and mm-hmm. figuring out how we were going to implement on two kind of larger programs or initiatives within our initiative, this Zero Food Waste Initiative. And that was, how are we going to implement our residential curbside food waste collection mm-hmm. and also launching a community compact around the zero food waste goal. We're there. We issued the press release yesterday. We're super excited. I mean, we're launching. We're going to have an incredible event tonight. Hope many of the listeners today are going to be joining us this evening for that celebration. And we're super excited. You know, our partner is in place with Momentum Recycling for the food waste collection. The compact has launched with an extraordinary number of early signatories. I mean, the community has really come out to support this goal. I think this is something that we as Park City and Summit County can be really proud of, and everybody can be play a role in this.
So this is kind of a layered approach, right? So tell us what the business end is and then what the residential end is and how people in our community can get involved.
This is the first phase of our Zero Food Waste Initiative, and I'd love to turn it to Andy to talk more in detail about that.
Yeah, thanks, E.E., and thank you again for having us on the show. We look at this from a broader term as different phases. As E.E. said, this is phase one. We're focusing on the residential aspect and the community awareness to start driving real change, real behavior change in our homes. Phase two, which we'll be talking about more come closer to 2025, we'll launch into businesses and we'll have a plan and a strategy for how we interact with that. Right now, we've developed this compact. We've developed the food waste collection program, incentivization program. To allow people to very easily sign up and get your food waste collected. We provide everything necessary to do so. We've had massive support throughout the whole community. I'm getting emails daily saying, this is amazing. How can we help out? How can we spread the word? And yeah, we also, one thing I'd like to talk about is our tracking our success. Our website is out there and we have a dashboard. We'll be updating it. For the first month, almost updating it daily. From there on out, it'll be updating monthly, and you can go on and see the impact that you are creating in our community.
So you say two phases, the residential curbside portion or phase. But before we get to that, let's talk again a little more about the community compact. Who are the signatories of this compact? Give us some examples.
The compact was based on a successful model in the past from other things that took place. And what it was is just a way to state the value of food waste does not belong in the landfill. I like to think of food waste as a resource that needs to go in the proper place. And there's a lot of talk about, and we can get into later in the show, on why we picked food waste, but it does not belong in the landfill for many reasons. So we set forth a compact stating this value that food does not belong in the landfill. It belongs being treated as a valuable resource. And we went out to seek different organizations, businesses, nonprofits to sign on to this compact and publicly state this value. We started with a pitch to the joint city-county council meeting, mm-hmm. and they were very supportive. It fell on great ears. They all, the feedback we got was even better than we could have possibly hoped for. They saw that this is something very valuable. They instantly signed on after going to their respective meetings and asked for a formal proclamation of support. And from there, it just took off. We now have 30 businesses, organizations, including the school district and Bill White Restaurants and many, many others who have signed publicly on the restaurant. And you can find all the signatories on our website.
And the chamber as well, right? So we have represented, we have government, we've got business, we've got all of our major resorts that have signed on, as well as Andy said, nonprofits and businesses in our community.
So when you say they sign on, what are they committing to? Or are they committing to anything other than just saying, we support this right now?
Yeah, a copy of the compact is on our website.
Okay.
And at this point, it is live. And we're asking for everyone in the whole community to go onto our website and to sign on to that compact.
Okay.
It is a document, less than one page. It has a few bullet points. And the general message is food waste is a valuable resource, and we need to treat it as such. We wanted to get a certain number of businesses and organizations to show support and to give it more validity across the community. We blew our expectations out of the water there. And now we're asking for everybody, every business, every resident to log into our website and sign their name to it.
So let's get into how this works for the residents, right? And you are saying that roughly 80% of the solid waste going to Summit County landfill could be diverted. Mm-hmm. So this is a big goal. It's a lofty goal. So how do people get involved now? You said the press release went out yesterday. I saw that there was a link. So if people go to the website, how does this work?
Yeah, the whole design of this collection program is to make it no barriers. People go into our website, click sign up now, and Park City Community Foundation is covering all startup costs, and that includes a kitchen caddy, a roll of compostable bags. It includes the receptacle for the curb, and we'll cover the first month of service cost. So sign up now. You're not paying anything until August. You'll have all of July food collection. 10% discount if you pay for the full year. There are two different size buckets. You can get a 5-gallon bucket or a 16-gallon rolling tote. You sign up, and sometime around the first week of July, a bin will show up with all the instruction materials. There'll be a kitchen magnet on what can go in that bin. Spoiler alert, everything can go in that bin, including fats, oils, greases, fog, chicken bones.
Bones.
Yeah,
meat.
We really just want to make this easy for anybody who wants to sign on. And
right.
I might note that this is just for this first phase, 84060 and 84098, so the greater Park City area right now. And as Andy mentioned, we will be rolling out in different neighborhoods throughout Summit County. But for right now, it's 84060 and 84098.
And I'd have to imagine something like this when you are maybe looking a little bit closer, taking a deeper look into your own food waste, that our behaviors actually might change as well about how much we are wasting and how we can change those habits. So I think collectively as a community, it kind of raises that flag too, to say that perhaps we are creating more food waste than necessary.
Claire, that's incredibly smart for you to say that. We are very heavily focused on the downstream, the effluent flow of our community, and how much food waste is entering the landfill, and it's a staggering amount. But nationally, about a third of the food we produce is wasted. So there are two aspects to this. One is the upstream flow. We don't need to waste so much food. And the other is the effluent flow, the downstream flow, that we can both look at.
Yeah, we actually had an interesting conversation in one of our committee meetings, which was about, you know, how are we gonna measure the amount of food waste? And is it better to be collecting more food waste? Because ultimately, like you said, Claire, like you'll be you know, if you sign up, you'll be mentally making a note of how much food waste you're going to be producing, and that mm-hmm. will eventually feed back and be like, well, you know what? I don't need to purchase as much food. I'm going to be more efficient in my consumption, purchasing and consumption, and so I may actually reduce the amount of food waste that I'm sending off to Momentum, and that ultimately is the goal.
Right, that root right. of the problem
right.
that we are causing these food wastes, and maybe we can look a little bit deeper in our behavior patterns. So when someone signs up and you guys take care of everything, what do you see as the output of this? How do you see this working? I guess technically, like, are people coming and collecting it and pushing it out there? How is it all working? Momentum Recycling?
Well, Momentum is our hauler, so Momentum will be collecting the food waste. Okay. And we're finding solutions not only for our individual residences, but also for multifamily units as well. So, you know, how is that going to work? You right. know, and eventually as we phase this out, we're looking at, you know, how can we do this collectively as well? You know, our goal for this year is to have 1,000 households sign up for the service. Okay. But we want to make sure that there, like Andy said, there are no barriers for anyone to be a part of this, because there is a cost to it. And so anybody who wants to be a part of this and perhaps can't afford it, we have subsidies and an incentive program to ensure that everybody in this community can be a part of this initiative.
So the cost, if I want to get a 5-gallon bucket, I live in Racquet Club Village, is it a one-time cost for my bucket, or is there a monthly fee? Can you give us a thumbnail sketch of that?
Well, please? Park City Community Foundation is going to take care of your startup costs,
okay.
as well as that first month. And then afterwards, for that 5-gallon bucket, it's $19.50, is that okay. right,
correct.
Andy? A month.
$19.50, and how often is the pickup?
Once a week.
So once a week. Momentum will come by. I put my bucket out at some designated location in front of my place or so, and they come and pick it up. They do they maybe too much detail, but do they actually just like discharge the bucket into a bigger receptacle, or do they take the bucket and replace it with a clean bucket?
So there are many different paths to this,
yes.
but the easiest that works for me is you'll have a kitchen caddy that we provide you, just
okay.
a small bucket with a lid, and you'll have a compostable bag in there. And all of your kitchen scraps will go into that compostable
into bag.
And when it's full, after a few days, depending on your cooking patterns and you know what
right.
have you, you tie that bag up and you put it into the bin
so
out on the curb.
Grab the bag.
Momentum will come up, dump the whole thing, and no problem.
Okay, and then where does Momentum take it?
Momentum will be taking it down to Wasatch Resource Recovery.
Right.
Anaerobic system, really neat, pretty cool thing. We'll give tours. If anyone's interested in a tour, contact me, and I will set mm-hmm. up a tour of that facility. It's really neat.
Yes. And right, and it gets converted into natural gas that powers homes. So, you know, Andy had talked about how our food waste is a misplaced resource, and that's exactly it. Like, this is an energy source that can be used to power homes. So
mm-hmm.
I think this is kind of the cool thing about this entire initiative. You know, recently in the last several months, the EPA has come out with reports that methane resulting from landfills, it's the third largest producer of methane in our country.
Mm-hmm.
It actually is equivalent to, you know, the greenhouse gas emissions of over 20 million cars a year. So, you know, this is something, you know, we established this goal last year, but all of this new news is coming out about the landfills. And, you know, aside from, you know, what we talked about, the climate change effects, you know, the food waste contaminates our water. It affects us and how we can optimize being a healthy community. So there are so many reasons why we're doing this. And then there's an economic reason. The landfill, you know, Tim Loveday, who is incredible in managing our landfill, you know, we'll need to open up another cell.
Right.
That's going to cost $3 to $3.5 million. And usually the lifespan is 17 years.
Okay.
Well, if we can get all the food waste out, we can double that lifespan.
Right.
So there's huge incentive to be doing this.
We're speaking with E.E. Hsu and Andy Heck from the Park City Community Foundation. We're talking about the launching of a residential curbside food waste collection program here in Park City, specifically the 84060 and 84098 zip codes, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You got an event coming up tonight to talk more about that. We'll get that to that in a minute or so. I want to circle back to the school district, because the school district is, I'm going to guess, is a large producer of food waste. I've spent one day at the cafeteria over a lunch periods at the Parley's Elementary, and I was astounded at the amount of food waste that gets, or the amount of food that gets thrown away. Kids get an apple. They take literally one bite of the apple, yuck, throw the whole apple away, and off to the landfill it went. So the school district has signed on to this compact. What will that involve? Will they be potentially having their own receptacles? And I'm sure it's going to be more than 5 gallon buckets.
Yeah, so currently the schools, some schools are doing a fantastic job at composting. This is not starting at zero with them.
Yes.
And big shout out to the school district, specifically Shelby, working very hard. Park City School District, yep. Working very hard to promote composting at different schools.
And Andy Eats was a part of that in the beginning, right? Eats was helping the school
Eats
district
was very
with
fundamental.
Their composting initiative.
Yes.
So kudos to them.
Yes. Yeah,
for
big shout out
that.
To them.
Good.
And with the Earth Club and the Green Teens, Green Teams from the schools, I reached out to them and we talked about what this compact means and what the efforts they were doing. And we saw a great way to collaborate. And it just made perfect sense for this group of students, the Earth Club, to bring this compact and make the formal ask at a school board meeting for the school board to support this initiative. And like so many other people, so many other organizations in our community, it was amazing, the response. The kids did a fantastic job. They presented it well. They answered all the questions incredibly well. They were very well knowledgeable about what the purpose of this compact was. And the response from the school board was, absolutely, what else can we be doing?
Good. And I feel like that's a great point, Chris, that you raise about the school district, because this is not a new, this may be a new initiative, but people have been composting in our community for quite some time, and we want everyone to continue to compost. They do not necessarily need to sign up for Momentum. Momentum is really there so that we can scale, so that we could get to the 1,000 homes and beyond and eventually get to zero food waste. But, you know, I think we need to give some recognition to the school district, to Park City Mountain, you know, and an epic promise, and to all of those other residents who have been composting all this time, whether they're doing it on their own or using a service, it's kind of been there already.
Yeah, and this program is umbrellaed under the Climate Fund, correct? So it is all a derivative of some big goals, even larger, loftier goals that we have as a community. Can you talk a little bit about the Climate Fund and what the mission is there and how this became an idea born from that?
Yeah, that's a great question. The Climate Fund, flashback, 2019, the Climate Fund was started alongside a fantastic organization called MT 2030. And it was a very traditional granting fund. Magnificent organizations that had sustainability goals. We had four different buckets of categories that we were looking at. And over the 4 years, granted out a little under $527,000. I don't want to misquote that number. Mm-hmm. Thank you. But when we were coming out of COVID, the board, our interim CEO, saw this as this initiative had gotten placed on the back burner. There was no staff running it. It was doing great work, but we wanted to see an amazing amount of impact, and we really wanted to bring it forward. Our new CEO came on, Joel Zero, and the board said, "Hey, let's put some energy here." But what can we really do? Where can we really see amazing amount of impact? What's something really big we can do that can be done? And we reached out, talked with a bunch of experts, and they all came back saying, look at your landfill. What's going on there? And we started looking. We started understanding. Reports started coming out about methane emissions from landfills. And we really understood, we saw the picture that this food waste is a really big problem. And it's something that can be achieved by shifting our behaviors, shifting our habits ever so slightly, and really gearing up for a big impact with success on the economic front in terms of costs of the landfill, and massive success on the environmental front, air quality, water quality, and all that. So that's how we got to where we are now.
Yeah, the Climate Fund is part of Park City Community Foundation, and Park City Community Foundation is so well suited to do work like this, because what the amazing staff at Park City Community Foundation does great at is convening all different sectors of our community. So again, we're seeing this with our compact, and we're seeing this with the Zero Food Waste Initiative, as well as all of the initiatives within the Park City Community Foundation, and that is bringing together government, nonprofit businesses, essentially the entire community together for this united goal.
Last couple minutes, the event. Give us the details on the event tonight.
All right, well, tonight it starts at 7 p.m. We have Molly Kawahata. We got to meet her last night, and she is incredible. She first spoke last year at Mountain Towns 2030 in Vail, and immediately afterwards, everybody just was so impressed with her message. And her message is really around hope and agency. So once we have hope, we have to have hope with these big, systemic, huge issues that we're facing. And when you have this hope, then, you know, we also need to know that everybody has agency. Everyone can play a role in being a part of the solution. She's a dynamic speaker. It will include an abridged version of her her film with Patagonia. She was a former climate advisor in the Obama White House. She's a strategist. She's an advocate for climate. She's just absolutely incredible. So Park City Community Foundation and the Climate Fund brought her here to inspire our community and help us launch. Andy, do you have anything to add?
Just seconding everything you said. Yeah. Fantastic speaker.
And I believe we are sold out. We're close to selling. I think we have about 430 already registered.
Oh, that's
I think
great.
We're at capacity.
Yeah.
Wow. But this is at the Santee.
At the Santee.
Okay, but if you haven't registered, you just can't come in. You're not walking in.
Well, I don't know, Andy. What do you think?
Well, it's going to be full.
It's worth it. Show up.
Yeah, show up.
Maybe you need another.
You never know.
You might get a seat.
Yes, exactly.
And I have heard her speak, and sure. Like you say, definitely worth coming out, definitely worth listening.
And we will try to get you in if you want to come.
And again,
you heard it here, E. We'll try to speak you in.
Real quick, again, the website for people to sign up for the residential program.
ParkCityCF.org.
ParkCityCF.org.
And is it /food waste, Andy?
I'm looking that up right now because we just launched our new website,
yes.
And I don't remember the /, but ParkCityCF.org.
Okay,
ParkCityCF.org. /zero food waste.
Zero food waste to sign up for the program. You need 1,000 homes. At least.
And
why not?
Yeah,
why not more?
We're going to have more. And yes. We're just so excited. So we want to thank everybody who's been involved, and thank everybody who's listening, and everybody who's been supporting climate and our environmental initiatives in the past. I mean, we couldn't have done this without all of you.
All right. E.E. Hsu and Andy Hecht from the Park City Community Foundation, thank you so much for coming by and give us an update and the good news on the launch of the program. We'll see you tonight. Hopefully.
Thank you.
Thank
See you,
you so much.
See you tonight.
All right.
And you are listening to This Green Earth. I'm Claire Wiley.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And now we turn our attention to fast fashion, which has become a fast and growing problem here in
That's good
all over the
it.
World, but in the United States as well. And we speak with Aidan Charan now with EarthDay.org about the effects in the industry, including, and we'll get to this a little bit later, deforestation, which I think everyone can have a better opportunity to wrap their head around just how this industry is affecting our climate. So, Aidan, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Now, we had you on before talking about plastics and the impact that plastics have on our environment. Mm-hmm. And now we're talking about the apparel industry and how it has been revolutionized. But this means that it might be going in a way that is detrimental to our planet, and that is in creating fast fashion. So first of all, can we get a definition about what fast fashion means or is?
Sure. So I guess my definition of fast fashion, and others might disagree, is so it's fashion that comes in and out really quickly in terms of styles. And it's materials that are cheaply made. They tend to be synthetic fibers, which what a lot of people don't realize mm-hmm. is these synthetic fibers are made up of plastic. Plastic is made up of petroleum, so fossil fuels are going directly onto us. And the majority of these clothes are then thrown away. Many people think they're recycled, but the truth of it is only about 1% of discarded clothing is actually recycled. Hmm. And that's from a fashion industry producing 100 billion garments a year, and 87% of those are ending up in a landfill.
So that's an interesting point, because some people believe that there's also another term called sustainable fashion, and which seems to be more socially responsible or eco-friendly, but that isn't necessarily the case.
Yeah, so we think about recycled materials and plastics, but in reality, a lot of these claimed recycled materials that are becoming our clothes aren't recycled at all. It's just a cheap way to say, hey, we're keeping plastic out of bottles by putting it into our clothing, therefore we should look this way. But the reality is these clothes that are made up of plastics are peeling microplastics off of us when they're being washed, when we're walking around, and those microplastics are then ending up into the air, ending up into the water, ending up in our food, and then, you know, ending up into us, and then unfortunately all animals on the planet, as well as they're starting to get into our soils.
When did fast fashion become a thing? I'm gonna take a guess that perhaps it found its origins when the apparel industry shifted from, say, the U.S. to China. Is that maybe part of the genesis behind this?
Yeah, that's part of the genesis. And I think the real pivoting point was about 15 years ago. So we're buying 60% more clothing than we were 15 years ago. And then with the rise of, you know, we can buy everything online, we can buy quick things from certain stores that are selling cheaper clothing that looks nicer. It just really took off. And then we had, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic, and everybody wasn't able to go out and buy clothing, but they still wanted to stay up with the current fashions of the time. So they're just ordering massive amounts of clothes that just fall apart quickly. So it's just really been in the last 20 years, the industry's really taken off in this direction.
So when you say fall apart quickly, I mean, they literally have a shelf life or a closet life of like a year or two?
Yeah, they're made up of cheaper products. They're made up of those plastic products that when you put them through the wash, they're going to tend to fall apart easier than, say, your organic cottons or your materials that we use for so many years. My wife and I tend to go to thrift stores to buy a lot of our clothing now because we know it's going to be a little bit sturdier. They look a little bit older. I'm not a stylish person by any means, but I try to buy clothes that look nice and are secondhand and made from 100% cotton or 100% hemp or 100% linen, in that sense, and try to go for organic cottons.
Right. Okay. We can talk more about that a little bit. But again, when we're talking about the industry too, obviously the first thing that comes to mind is clothing, but do we include footwear and other apparel in general?
Yeah, so footwear is part of it as well. Yeah. So when we think of the rubber that is on our shoes, we think of it as natural rubber. But an issue with fast fashion is they've kind of taken the term rubber and kind of mutated it to mean plastic rubber as well. So it's no longer a natural product. It is made up of fossil fuels. It's made up of petroleum. And that's one of the larger issues we see. And because of that, these natural rubbers are pretty sturdy compared to the plastic rubbers, and these plastic rubbers tend to do that same flaking that I mentioned with the clothing, and they just wear down quicker than the natural rubbers.
So yeah, we're talking accessories, handbags.
Yeah, handbag. I'm thinking jewelry or so. Jewelry. All kind of falls under the rubric of fast fashion.
Yeah, it all falls under the rubric. And when plastic first started becoming popular, it was called Bakelite. Immediately following World War II, we saw the first kind of plastic jewelry. And it was just kind of trendy little pieces, but now it's almost on every piece of jewelry. Every piece of jewelry you buy from a cheaper store is going to be that, or it's going to be a cheaper metal. But the issue with those plastics is they're just not as durable as other products. So you're buying it, you're spending, you know, a cheap amount at first, but then you're having to go back to the store and replace these items time and time again.
Yeah, and I think that it's a shift in how we think, because I know that I have definitely, I don't want to call myself a victim. I was going to say falling victim, but I have definitely done this. Mm-hmm. I have definitely walked, you know, down the street, looked in a window, thought, oh, I really like that, gone and purchased it, but didn't really do a true look into how it was created, how it was made. So I think that educating ourselves about our clothing and how we utilize our dollars is also a big deal, because we've talked about this before on the program, that people really can vote with how the world works with their money. Right. And how they're buying products, or how they're choosing to buy products. So I tend to say, you know, we, now that we are educated about this, what are we doing about it? So what are some of the things that you, and they don't even necessarily need to be low lift, we can start there, but what are some of the things that people can do that will really take a shift in this fast fashion?
Yeah, you said it at first. It's just research where your clothes are coming from. So research the brands you're buying from. Make sure they're sustainably sourced. Make sure that they're, you know, trying to make sure that they're more natural fibers and more natural organic cottons, organic hemp, organic linen. And then from there, you can just go shop secondhand first. So go look at pre-owned clothing from thrift stores. You know, make sure they're clean. You know, wash them first, obviously, and then just try to buy fewer clothes. So value what you're buying. Buy clothes you know are going to last for a while. They fit well. You're going to have them for years to come. And then invest only in the clothes you really like and need. I know this is going to be kind of hard for some people. I'm a little bit different. I've been wearing the same set of t-shirts since high school, just because I'm not stylish by any means necessary. But for others, it's just going out and buying clothes you truly, truly love to wear, that are comfortable on you, and that they're just sturdier. And then from there, just try to go shop locally, try to buy natural fibers, and then buy organic clothing as well.
So looking on the tag, like you say, try to identify the type of material that that the clothes are made of. Country of origin, does that play a role in helping you understand whether it's fast or not?
Yeah, that can play a role. So we outsource a lot of our textiles overseas to parts of the Pacific Ocean. So that, you know, China, Vietnam, I'm trying to think of some other countries. But if you look at those clothes, they're going to be a lot of the times of lower quality than the ones we're buying in the U.S. because all they're doing is just trying to churn out as many products as possible. So mm-hmm. Try to buy locally made clothes, or clothes that are, you know, are locally made, or at least ethically soundly made. The other issue with those clothes that we're buying from overseas is we don't know what the working conditions look like.
Right.
Absolutely. Or what their wages are and how many hours they're working. And so it's not necessarily a great industry for people to be working in.
Yeah, and a lot of the issues also come down to the chemicals being used in those countries. So it might be a chemical that we know is harmful. We banned it in certain parts of the world, such as Europe or in the U.S., but doesn't have those same restrictions in those countries, and they're taking advantage of a class of people that have less money, and they're just putting them forward as just kind of a sacrificial lamb, in a sense, so that we can have cheap clothing.
Yeah, let's talk about the environmental impacts. You alluded to, you know, the most obvious one, the use of plastics and synthetics in a lot of this clothing and footwear and other apparel. What are some of the other environmental impacts associated with fast fashion?
Yeah, so some of the other things, and you kind of alluded to it earlier as well with deforestation, is we're seeing an uptick of deforestation, and this is outside of, you know, the plastic stuff, but we're seeing more trees being cut down in the Amazon rainforest, for example, to host more livestock, so more cows, so to produce more leather and the sale of clothing. So that is up to 200 million trees are cut down each year to be transformed into the textiles for clothing. And then we have a larger amount of trees being cut down just to host this cattle that we have that we want for their leather.
Yeah, deforestation is a large effect on this. And overall, I mean, we talk about if we're mowing down these trees, it seems just even aesthetically, or it kind of seems sad, but for the earth, they have a big role. They play a big role in carbon emissions. So can you talk us through why it is so detrimental to lose these trees?
Yeah. On top of, you know, trees being a huge carbon sink, so they take in the CO2 that we're producing, whether it's from transportation, livestock, our daily lives, we're producing large amounts of CO2. Us in the U.S. per person are producing the largest amounts. So in turn, forests act as a sink for that. So the more forests we cut down, the less CO2 we have being absorbed in a natural way. But we also have the issues of the vast majority of our species, of our land species. So 70% of land animals live within these forests, and they're relying on these trees for their homes. They're relying on these trees for their nutrients. And once you start cutting them down, it's causing huge amounts of biodiversity loss. And you know, you can try to mitigate that by creating what's called forest tunnels between large patches of forest. But that is not going to have the same effectiveness as a large scale, so a large untouched forest. Pockets are great, they're fine, but they're not as good as the whole thing.
So it's, well, be clear, it's we're not throwing an indictment to the leather industry writ large. It's probably a similar approach to looking for leather products that are, like you say, locally sourced or U.S. sourced, versus sourced out of Brazil or other South American countries whose practices in the cattle industry, i.e. leather industry, are less than environmentally mindful.
Right, that's one thing to look forward to. But also try to look away from leather in a lot of cases. We don't, just depending on your feelings on if you want to move away from using animal products where you can, leather is one of the top things that you can kind of drop.
Yeah.
I mean, or you can go and find a secondhand store with some older leather that was made, you know, 20 years ago that's still in really great condition. Just do the proper things to take care of that leather, or take it to a professional to do it professionally clean, professionally taken care of, and then you'll have that jacket for years to come.
Right, because I think people think they're doing the right thing. But we do call it pleather, and there's a reason there's a P in there. And so people think they're doing the right thing by not purchasing leather so that you're not sacrificing the cow. But when you buy pleather...
Pleather, and pleather is
plastic.
Plastic.
Basically, yes. So I think it is this educational mindset of people are trying, I think we're all trying to maybe do something that feels good or right, but really truly having that education about how this is being produced, where it's coming from, and is that really the answer to buy pleather? Probably not.
Yeah, it's such a hard thing. I know and every time I come onto a podcast or come to talk to people, they're like, you're just giving me bummer after bummer fact, unfortunately. But it's trying to move away from, you know, those pleathers is the best thing to do. And it is terrible that for years we were fed the lie that, like, look, we're doing this great thing by producing this plastic leather that's sustainably sourced, supposedly, but what they didn't tell you is that it's coming from fossil fuels. So they're going out, they're creating these huge environmental disasters, these huge environmental holes, where they're producing the petroleum that then becomes your jacket. And then the jacket continues to break down and cause further harm. Mm-hmm. So while it seems like a good idea at first, and it seems better for the livestock or better for the cattle, in reality, it probably has the same environmental detriment as the cattle industry does.
We're speaking with Aidan Charon. He's with EarthDay.org. We're talking about fast fashion and its environmental impacts. Aidan, are there companies that are doing the right thing that we can look for their brand?
So I can't name any brands in particular, but there are certain certificates and there are certain brands that do produce 100% natural and organically sourced products. Mm. So just look for those labels. So look for the kind of labels that say where the cotton's coming from or where the hemp's coming from, and just do your research on these brands. Like, look them up, maybe check their sustainability. There are certain stores that kind of pride themselves on fast fashion. Everybody's probably familiar with the ones that you can order quickly online. It shows up in a plastic bag. It's $4 for a t-shirt. While that seems great at first, it's going to fall apart quickly. It's cheaply made. It's, you know, flaking off millions of microfibers every day. So just try to avoid those and just look for products that you know are going to last. Do your research on these companies.
And you read about, you know, people are clever. You can find leather made from mangoes, from mango waste, which has a ripple effect of good as far as we were just talking
from
about
food waste.
Exactly.
Okay.
So and they also have downfills made from wildflowers. So people, I think, are smart and they are trying to...
And there's a growing number of options.
Right, move in this direction.
Available.
And I think that you can buy a lot of clothing and you pay a certain amount, but you are accumulating anyway this payment of a large, really, if you look at it, because you have all these things. Perhaps if you utilize that money instead of buying more, you could buy mango leather that might cost a little bit more.
And there's a premium associated...
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest, that's one reason there's an attraction to fast fashion.
Right.
Like you say, it's cheap. You know, I can go to the local large box store here in Kimball Junction and get a polo shirt or a t-shirt for, like you say, for $6, for $8. And you know what? It's not that bad looking. It satisfies what I'm looking for. But if I want to pay a little premium, you know, I can get a nicer polo shirt, but it could cost me $23 or $32. And so our wallets, leather or pleather, as they are, mean a lot in these decisions.
But if you're buying less and of better quality, then it's probably going to last, like your t-shirts.
And the shirt.
Your 100% organic t-shirt.
And like you, Aidan, the shirt I'm wearing comes from the local Christian Center, the secondhand clothing store, which we're fortunate here in Park City, we have some really nice clothing that ends up at the secondhand clothing store.
Absolutely. And there are a lot of resources, Aidan, that I'm seeing because I have been going through your website, earthaid.org. You have even a toolkit of how to sustainably shop for clothes. So if people go to the website, it shows you kind of a breakdown of what you can do and how we can all maybe, you know, every little bit helps, right? So if we're all making a little bit more of a difference, and I'm definitely putting the mirror back on myself,
right,
on some of these things, because it can be easy, like I said, to walk by a store and think, oh, I like it's, that, and not really think about
the impulse
purchase. Right, exactly. Well, we appreciate you coming on the show. Aidan, is there anything in particular in your department that you're working on right now that you want to share?
Yeah, so we're working with the national legislatures in the U.S. at least to pass a couple of different bills, one being the Plastic Pellet Free Waters Act. It is a mouthful to say, and I'm really glad that I got it right this time. But it's focused on cutting down the amount of nurdles that are ending up, and a nurdle is basically the starting point for plastic after it's gone through its manufacturing from petroleum, gets all its super toxic chemicals added to it, and then it becomes a little, basically a bead. So we're working on legislation to get rid of all of that and trying to focus heavier on protecting communities from the plastic scourge. And then at the end of this year, we're hoping to have the Global Plastics Treaty signed right in time for 2025, where we will then continue to negotiate that treaty.
Okay, so if people want to find out more about what you're doing in particular, what we've said, earthday.org, but is there any other place that you would drive them, or is there any other areas of education that we can go to?
Directly at earthday.org, if you go to our initiatives page, you can kind of check out our both our End Plastics program and our Fashion for the Earth program, as well as our Climate Education, Campus Coalition, and just kind of find any spot where an individual can fit in. So if you're a college student just looking to get involved, check out our Campus Coalition. If you're just somebody that has some free time and wants to do a local cleanup, we have a great global cleanup program. We talked a little bit about food waste on the Food Prints for the Future program, as well as our Regenerative Agriculture program.
Well, it'd be great for all of us to go to that food waste page, because that's who we just had on this morning. And our community is actually launching a very large initiative to help mitigate our food waste. And we just talked about how people locally, they are providing them with resources in which they will come and collect it, and then they will take it and turn it into natural gas. So we're working hard on that here in Park City. So right. A little shout out to our community. But thanks so much again, Aiden. You always have so much information for us, and you help us take a deeper look at how we are showing up in our world and our day to day. So we appreciate you being on the show.
I really appreciate you having me. Have a great rest of your day.
Yeah, thanks, Aiden. All right.
News item.
We have 2 minutes or so for a news item I mentioned at the opening of the show. This with respect to the solar and wind industries and how they are doing since the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act was put into play, which would have provide big tax breaks for both solar and wind power farms and the industry in general. Well, solar panel installations have, over just this past 2 years, doubled year over year since the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act. So they're doing great. However, the wind industry is actually increasing at a decreasing rate. It's not going away, per se. It's just not increasing the same way that solar has. And some of the reasons are cost. It's expensive to build a wind farm, let's say. It takes a lot of land, so there's sometimes public pushback. People don't like wind farms in their backyard, seeing large turbines and such. The areas of wind are finite, and so the low-hanging fruit with respect to wind areas around the Midwest are decreasing. There's offshore, but they're also getting a lot of pushback again from the public and from other industries and politicians with respect. So wind farms haven't grown as much as they have people thought with the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act. Now there is some signs that shows that maybe we're turning the corner. The cost associated with building them, I've kind of come down a bit. There is still a coal-fired power plants that are still closing, and so you need something to replace that. So there is some signs that maybe the wind power industry will start in the U.S. Will recover, but right now it's not doing as well as we thought it would be. But solar doing great, because solar farms are easy to install. They have a low profile. They don't get as much a public pushback as wind farms.
So we'll keep track of that and see if we can't make some improvements in that area. But yeah. I also was walking around the other day, went for a bike ride, and I try to check out all the houses in the community that have solar panels or are installing solar panels. I think we're doing pretty good as a community as well.
That continues to grow. That's still an industry that's very viable. So that continues to grow, as well as the building of large solar array. These farms around the state in Nevada and Arizona and sunny areas around the U.S. So the solar industry is healthy, and it should be.
Well, that's good. Look,
so
that's
we'll leave
good
it at that.
News. We'll yes. put out that good news, and then we'll wrap it up. And you know, you can email us your thoughts, comments, and ideas for topics and stories that you would like us to cover. We love to hear from you. It's thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
The interviews for this show will be posted on the KPCW website later today. And as always, thanks again for joining us. Hey, and thanks to our guests, again, E.E. Hsu and Andy Heck from the Park City Community Foundation. The event tonight to help launch their food waste initiative at the Santee, 7 p.m. It's sold out, in effect.
Yes, I think there might be a couple tickets left, so you can maybe
you
try.
Just show up.
But
standing room only.
Yes,
is good.
Could be. Yes, that's right. So you are listening to KPCW Park City. We are so glad that you are joining us for This Green Earth.